Sons of Fortune by Geoffrey Archer, read by Martin Jarvis. Susan plonked the ice cream firmly on Michael Cartwright's head. It was the first occasion the two of them had met, or that was what Michael's best man claimed when Susan and Michael were married 21 years later. Both of them were 3 years old at the time, and all Susan was willing to say on the subject was, "Well, he asked for it, didn't he?" Susan ended up with a spanking. Not the ideal start for any romance. The next recorded meeting, according to the best man, was at elementary school. At the end of their first year, Susan and Michael were jointly awarded the class prize. Their teacher considered it the best course of action to prevent another ice cream incident. The rivalry continued unabated through junior and senior high until they departed for different universities. Their paths next crossed when Susan's parents threw a graduation party for their daughter. Susan didn't recognize her old rival immediately. It wasn't until she offered him a glass of wine and Michael remarked, "At least this time you didn't pour it all over me," that she realized who this handsome man was. "God, I behaved dreadfully, didn't I?" said Susan, wanting him to deny it. "Yes, you did," he said. "But then I expect I deserved it." "You did," she said. They became engaged a year later. Michael was working for Hartford Life Insurance and Susan as a history teacher at Jefferson High, so they decided to get married during the summer vacation. What they hadn't planned was that Susan would become pregnant on their honeymoon. Michael couldn't hide his delight, and when Dr. Greenwood told them in the sixth month it was going to be twins, he was doubly delighted. "Well, that will solve one problem," was his first reaction. "Namely?" asked Susan. "One can be a Republican and the other a Democrat." "Not if I have anything to do with it," said Susan, rubbing her stomach. On the 28th day of the ninth month, Susan delivered two boys, Nathaniel at 4:37 and Peter at 4:43. For the next hour, the parents took turns cuddling them. Then Michael accompanied his sons to the nursery, where he pressed his nose up against the glass that divided the corridor from the row of cribs, gazing at the boys as they lay sleeping, wanting to tell everyone who passed, "They're mine." Michael couldn't remember how long he remained there before he eventually walked along to the elevator to find Dr. Greenwood had exchanged his scrubs for a sports jacket. "I wish they were all that easy," he told the proud father, as the elevator stopped on the ground floor. Dr. Greenwood would have left the hospital with Michael had he not spotted Ruth Davenport. Michael Cartwright glanced back to see the doctor holding open the elevator for two women, one heavily pregnant. An anxious look had replaced Dr. Greenwood's warm smile. Ruth Davenport had already accepted that this would be her last chance. After two miscarriages in as many years, Dr. Greenwood could not advise his patient to risk becoming pregnant again. Robert Davenport, when he learned his wife was expecting for a third time, had issued an ultimatum. "This time, you will take it easy." Robert knew it would be difficult, if not impossible, for his wife to take it easy. She was, after all, the daughter of Josiah Preston, and it was often said that if Ruth had been a boy, she, and not her husband, would have ended up as president of Preston Pharmaceuticals. But Ruth had to settle for the consolation prize when she succeeded her father as chairman of St. Patrick's Hospital Trust, a cause with which the Preston family had been associated for four generations. Ruth hadn't married until the age of 33. It certainly wasn't for lack of suitors, all claiming undying devotion to the heir of the Preston millions. Ruth simply hadn't fallen in love with any of them. In fact, Ruth was beginning to doubt if she would ever fall in love, until she met Robert. Robert Davenport had joined Preston Pharmaceuticals from Roche via Johns Hopkins and Harvard Business School, and became the youngest deputy chairman in the company's history. He was neither overwhelmed nor overawed by the Preston millions. Ruth announced she was pregnant only weeks after their wedding, and the miscarriage was the only blemish in an otherwise charmed existence. This time, Ruth took her husband's advice and resigned.